This reading comes from the end of the Gospel of Mark. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James, and Salome brought spices so they might go and anoint him. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. They had been saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb?" When they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had already been rolled back. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, there is the place they laid him. But go tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. And that's where the Gospel of Mark, the oldest of the four Gospels, originally ended, with the tomb empty and the followers of Jesus terrified, amazed, and afraid. And we are left to think about and wrestle with this image of the tomb, this image of death, and what it might mean for the stone to be rolled away, what it might mean that there is something that occurs in the confused aftermath of the darkness of the tomb. When I was in seminary, as part of my training to become a minister, I completed a unit of clinical pastoral education, or CPE as it's called, which for me entailed serving as a hospital chaplain for a semester, along with a cohort of four other students from different seminaries. I was the lone Unitarian Universalist in the group, as is often the case in such groups. The others were United Methodists, Baptists, and Presbyterians, as I recall. One of those others, Andrew, was intensely curious about Unitarian Universalism and spent a fair amount of time asking me about what it was that I believed and what I didn't believe, and why Unitarian Universalism appealed to me more than the other faith traditions. The thing that puzzled Andrew the most, and annoyed him a little, I think, was that I seemed somewhat indifferent to whether the bodily resurrection of Jesus was something that actually happened or not. He believed with all of his heart that the resurrection was an actual physical truth, and he thought that without the truth of the bodily resurrection, no one could possibly care about the life of Jesus, that without the literal fact of the resurrection of the body of Jesus, that none of it would matter. I tried to explain numerous times that the resurrection did, in fact, matter a great deal to me, but it mattered to me as a deep metaphor for transformation, which for me is far more important than the matter of whether or not Jesus actually rose from the dead. As you might imagine, we went around and around in this discussion, and I think in the end we both accepted each other's point of view as being what was right for that person, but not necessarily right for everyone. But I was completely serious about the metaphor being far more important to me than the fact. Deep metaphor can be life-changing and life-sustaining. Deep metaphor can offer ways of understanding life in ways that factual information alone cannot do. deep metaphor, when it's engaged with, changes reality. At the time that the Gospel of Mark was written in the first century, the writer likely would have been familiar with Greek and Roman literature of the time, including the many stories of mythical transformation, such as those in Ovid's Metamorphoses. Biblical scholar Amy Jo Levine suggests that Mark's account of the resurrection, or at least Mark's account that suggests a resurrection, might be considered as part of the same literature of mythical transformations and metamorphoses. It was perhaps Mark's way of saying, we followers of Jesus have our own metamorphosis story, and it is a real doozy. One of the famous lines from Ovid's Metamorphoses comes from a speech by Pythagoras in Book 15, in which he says, omnia mutantur nihil interit, often translated as everything changes, nothing perishes, or everything transforms, nothing perishes. Mark's parables describing the kingdom of heaven, particularly all the parables related to agriculture and the natural world, seem deeply related to this same concept. Everything transforms, nothing perishes. It is an idea and metaphor drawn from the natural world, but it conveys a deeply spiritual message. The image of the empty tomb from the end of the Gospel of Mark evokes certain feelings and experiences that may be familiar to us right now. Trauma, terror, and utter amazement at how disrupted our entire lives seem to have become in the wake of the pandemic, in the midst of what often seems like complete political and social chaos. But it is important for us to remember when we can that there is something waiting for us on the other side of this time of darkness and this sense of emptiness. When all is said and done, something new will emerge and we will all be changed. Everything transforms. In her poem titled In Impossible Darkness, Kim Rosen writes, do you know how the caterpillar turns? Do you remember what happens inside a cocoon? You liquefy. There, in the thick black of your self-spun womb, void as the moon before waxing, you melt. Conceiving in impossible darkness, the sheer inevitability of wings. I may or may not believe in the literal story of the resurrection, but I do believe in resurrection. I do believe that everything transforms, nothing perishes. I do believe, as suggested by Valerie Carr, that the darkness of the tomb might be transformed into the darkness of the womb if we are willing to breathe and push, to bring into being from the midst of the surrounding darkness new life, new breath, new energy to face whatever is before us. Clarence Jordan, a farmer, theologian, and scholar of the Christian scriptures, once stated, the proof that Jesus was raised from the dead is not the empty tomb, but the full hearts of his transformed disciples. The crowning evidence that he lives is not a vacant grave, but a spirit-filled fellowship, not a rolled-away stone, but a carried-away church. Therein lies the true message of Easter. It is not a message of redemptive violence only. It is not the message that Christ died for our sins, full stop. Rather, it is the message that in the face of the darkness of the tomb, we are called to breathe, to push, to bring into being something that could not have existed before, something driven by the carried away, spirit-filled, radical love of our fellowship with one another. This kind of love which we discover and engage in together is the practice of resurrection. When we practice resurrection, we recognize that all of life is about transition and transformation. That terror and amazement exist in the same continuum as joy and wonder. In the words of the poet James Broughton, echoing the words of Ovid, "Nothing perishes, nothing survives, everything transforms." This idea, which is what I think resurrection is all about, is at the very center of the Christian Gospels, and it is found in other places as well, and not just in religious contexts. For example, in physics, the law of conservation of energy states that energy can neither be created nor destroyed. Rather, it can only be transformed from one form to another. Nothing perishes, nothing survives, everything is transformed. And in botany, we see a similar idea and a similar pattern at work. The annual cycle of plant growth, which goes from seed to vegetative growth, to flower, to death, and back to seed. Again, nothing perishes, nothing survives, everything transforms. And in fact, as I mentioned, Jesus used this very same plant metaphor when he said, "Unless the grain of wheat dies, it remains just a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit." Nothing perishes, nothing survives, everything transforms. This metaphor has very much been on my mind over the past few years as we've experienced something like the darkness of the tomb and caught glimpses of what might emerge from the darkness of the womb. Even from death and unimaginable trauma, new life rises up. And resurrection is not just about the individual, it is about everyone. Resurrection at its deepest core is not about the salvation of any one individual, it's about everyone rising up together. In her book titled Practicing Resurrection, Nora Gallagher, echoing the sentiments of Clarence Jordan, writes, "We spend so much time in the church believing in the resurrection or not believing that we may lose the point. What if the resurrection is not about the post-crucifixion appearances of Jesus alone, but also about what those appearances pointed to? What they asked. And it is finally what we do with them that matters. We have to practice resurrection." Our beliefs about resurrection are relatively unimportant and, frankly, often irrelevant. What truly matters is how we practice resurrection. What matters is how we are faithful to the idea of rising from the darkness. As Unitarian Universalists, we tend to have an easier time embracing and celebrating Christmas than we do Easter. Part of it's because I think everybody loves this image of the baby Jesus, right? What's not to love about an infant that was born among the animals while the special star twinkled above? And we somehow managed to look past such problematic details as the virgin birth and angels and so on. But we tend to struggle with Easter a bit more. Part of it is because you can't have Easter without Good Friday. You can't have the resurrection without the crucifixion. And we don't like looking at the evil in the world that can lead to torture and death and destruction, even though it happens in our world every day. But Easter offers us a way in to one of the deepest, most important and transformational metaphors known to humanity, that of resurrection, of transforming the tomb into the womb, of everything always changing form. It is our task as human beings not merely to endure this transformation, but to embrace it, to celebrate it, to joyfully enter into it. The poem that I mentioned earlier by James Broughton is titled Easter Exalted, and it reads as follows. Shake out your qualms, shake up your dreams, deepen your roots, extend your branches. Trust deep water and head for the open, even if your vision shipwrecks you. Quit your addiction to sneer and complain. Open a lookout, dance on a brink, run with your wildfire. You are closer to glory, leaping an abyss, than upholstering a rut. Not dawdling, not doubting, intrepid all the way, walk toward clarity. At every crossroad, be prepared to bump into wonder. Only love prevails. En route to disaster, insist on canticles. Lift your ineffable out of the mundane. Nothing perishes, nothing survives, everything transforms. I hope and pray that we will remember even in the face of the darkness of the tomb, even in the midst of the challenges we have faced and continue to face, even when we may not see a way forward, nothing perishes, nothing survives, everything transforms. May it be so. Amen. These closing words were written by Jan Richardson. Early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb. While it was still dark, while it was still night, while she could not see, while she thought death held sway, while she grieved, while she wept, while it was still dark, resurrection began. Go in peace.